Their handout. If I could get somebody to help me pass these out, that would be great. Pass those out. I made more copies this time, so hopefully we have enough. If not, Brian will get us some more, I guess. So, yeah, thank you guys all for coming back. And we're going to be on kind of recapping here at the beginning on what we talked about last week. And we started our series on financial stewardship. We talked about how we ought to view the money that we have and how we ought to view our finances, and that we are just stewards of our finances. We're managing them on the Lord's behalf. And so when we view them that way, it should help us to, you know, open our hand a little bit and be more giving with it, be more wise with the way that we spend it, because, you know, we're going to have to give an account of the things that we do. And so we want to make sure that we're being wise stewards with the finances that God has given us. We talked about being intentional and the importance of that. We talked about the value that God places on finances and how it's mentioned over 800 times in the scriptures, and how, you know, that illustrates the fact that it is important to God. And so if it's important to God and he spends that much time talking about it, then maybe we should spend some time talking about it, and we should put a level of importance on it. We talked about, you know, what is of value to us, and how the things that we spend our money on show the things that are important to us. And if you're married, the importance of having those conversations with your spouse, because what's important to you is what you're going to spend your money on. And so as a husband and wife, you should be working together to you know, spend the money on things that are important to you, and how if you're married, the finances should be combined. Otherwise, it has a tendency to divide. And when your finances are put together and your goals are united, then you can work on, you know, working on being unified in all other areas of your marriage. And so we talked about all of that. Thank you, Bob. And I gave you guys a couple of assignments. One of them was to start working on a budget for April. Don't worry if you didn't get very far or done with that at all. Tonight we're going to talk a little bit more about some ways to help the budget. And then next week we're really going to dive into, like, how to put the budget together. So if you didn't get very far on that one, that's okay. The other one was just to go back and look at last month's transactions on your credit card or bank statement or whatever, and kind of review those and just see where you're at. We'll talk about it again next week when we get into the actually how to do a budget, but knowing where what you've spent money on and where you've been is helpful in projecting where you're going to go. Probably if you did that part of the assignment, you probably saw some things that you didn't expect, or some things maybe that were more than what you thought you spent, or maybe some things that were less than what you thought you spent. And so hopefully if you did that, that was a good, helpful exercise for you. If not, you can do it again this week, or do it this week instead of doing it last week. Anyway, so tonight, though, I do want to start talking about things that impact your budget. And like I said, if you did the homework, you probably found some things that maybe you weren't expecting, or some things that were slightly surprising to you. I know the first time we did a budget, we went back and looked at the last 3 months of transactions that we had done, and both Brenda and I were very surprised at the amount of money we spent on certain things, and you know, it made more sense why we felt like we didn't have enough money, because we looked and saw, oh, it's going to all these different places. That was 15 years ago, and now there's even more places to spend that money and more easily accessible ways to spend it, and prices on everything is higher, so it goes even a little bit faster than it used to. So maybe you found some subscriptions that you didn't know about. There's services out there now that we'll go through your bank accounts for you and find all these subscriptions and let you know, hey, did you know you're spending $10 a month on, you know, things, something you signed up for 3 years ago that you never canceled, the 7-day free trial or whatever. So there's things like that. Maybe you saw some subscriptions. Maybe you realized that you spend more money on Amazon than you thought you spent on Amazon. That would be one thing on our budget if we look that over really closely. It's really easy to go on there and just, oh, yeah, we need this, we need that, we need this. And, you know, all these packages show up on your porch and your bank account feels it. So maybe you notice some of those things. I want to just give you guys a little story. Something happened that just since I spoke last week, I talked to you guys about our, you know, debt-free journey a little bit, and how, you know, we've been out of debt for this period of time. And I got this call last week, I think it was last Friday, and it said spam likely. And usually I don't answer those because it says spam likely. I don't want to talk to a spammer. So this time, for some reason, I answered it. And they asked for Stephen, and that's my first name. And somebody calls me Stephen on the phone. I know that they probably don't know who I am. And so I'm like, you know, what is this about? And they're like, this is a debt collector calling, and, you know, any information used on this phone call is going to be used for collecting a debt. And I'm like, okay, this is, I just about hung up then. And then he said something about Fidelity Communications. And I'm like, well, I used to have Fidelity Internet. And I'm like, okay, whatever. So I hang up on the guy, and I call Fidelity. And I'm like, hey, you know, I canceled my service with you guys back in December of last year. So I got this weird phone call, and they're like, yeah, you owe us like $38. And we sent it to a debt collector. And I'm like, why do I owe you $38? And they're like, well, you know, you canceled your service in December, and when you cancel your service, it cancels your automatic payment that you have set up. And I'm like, well, I never got a bill. And they're like, well, it looks like you're on electronic statements, and so we didn't get a bill. We didn't send you a bill. We didn't call you until this debt collector calls me. And then, like, the next day, I think I got a letter in the mail also from the debt collector. But anyways, I say all that to say, they reversed one of the late fees. There was a late fee on there for like $9. So I paid this $27 or $29 bill or whatever it was. But I give you guys that example because that literally just happened since I was last up here telling you, you know, we don't have any debt except our mortgage. And there's a debt collector calling me last Friday to collect on a debt. So I want to come clean to all of you and let you know that I did pay the debt. It is no longer owed. It was an oversight. But I feel like I pay pretty close attention to our finances and to our budget, and I, you know, checking the bank account pretty regularly just to make sure everything looks right. But even then, stuff can slip through the cracks. You know, we have to be intentional. We have to be kind of on top of everything because it's really easy to let things slip through the cracks. And so I'll talk a little bit more about some of that stuff as we go. But it was just kind of funny that I got that call this week. And so I want to share that with you guys because, you know, all of us have money issues or money problems or mistakes with our money, or we miss something along the way. So I'm certainly no better than you guys. I'm just up here teaching it because I like talking about it, and Brian said I could. So that's why I'm here. But anyways, I did talk about last week how, regardless of where we are, probably all of us in this room have enough money coming in to at least cover our necessities, right? Our house, our car, our gas, our food, utilities, things like that. Most all of us, maybe all of us, have enough money coming in for those things. And sometimes maybe it feels like that's all we have money for, and we don't get to do any of the fun stuff. But I think most of us probably fall into the situation where we can at least cover the necessities of our household budget. And I think if we can, what we're going to talk about tonight hopefully will give us maybe a little bit more wiggle room on that, or find some ways that we can have a little bit more room in our budget. When it comes to budgeting, though, there's really only two things that can help, like, balance the equation. One of them is you can earn more money, and the other one is you can spend less money, right? There's only how much you have coming in and how much you have going out. That's the entirety of what you have to work with. And so there's really only two ways that it can go: earn more money or spend less money. Obviously, both would be an option as well. But it sounds really simple, and it is simple, but it's also really difficult. And balancing those things out and figuring out the best ways to earn more money or the best ways to spend less money can be sometimes difficult. So more than ever, though, today, like in 2024, we have more ways to earn money maybe than we ever have in history. I mean, there's just so many side hustles. You know, a lot of people call them side hustles. There's just so many extra ways that we can earn money. And so I just want to spend a little bit of time talking about that, because I think sometimes we get in a mindset where, you know, I'm so strapped on my finances, I don't have enough money to do the things I want to do. I barely have enough money. Oh, there's more handouts right up here. I don't have enough money to do all the things I want to do. I feel like everything's so tight, it stresses me out to even think about it. And, you know, the debt that we have, the expenses that we have, it's overwhelming. We can't make all of this work. And so one of, you know, the best ways to fix that is to earn some additional income. And so there's so many opportunities for it. I've got a list on here. There's a QR code up here and on your handout to it's just a link to an article that is up on Ramsey's website. I think it's 27 ways to maximize a side hustle or something like that. I forget the name of the exact article, but that QR code will take you there. So just a few things I wanted to kind of talk about a little bit. A promotion or a job change. So if you're kind of strapped and you're paycheck to paycheck, a job change may not be, it may not be the best time for a job change if you're relying on those paychecks to come in. But maybe there's, you know, maybe there's something else you can do at your current job to move up or, maybe you've been at your job long enough and now you can maybe go to a different company and doing kind of the same thing and get a promotion that way. Overtime at your current job is a really, great way. I mean, you're getting time and a half if your job will offer it. Some jobs do, some jobs don't. But if you can get time and a half of your current pay and work a little bit extra, that's a great way to do it. There's so many different delivery services, Uber, Lyft, if you're wanting to drive people around, Instacart, Uber Eats, DoorDash, Grubhub, Amazon Flex is a fairly new one where you can deliver for Amazon, use your own car, you drive out to their warehouse, you pick up a bunch of packages, they give you a route, you go drop off packages. That kind of thing is becoming so, so common. People are, more and more than ever, people are, interested in having things brought to them. So, I'll tell you guys a little, some stories throughout the night tonight of that. I've done Uber Eats on and off for the last 4 years. There's just so many, it just doesn't seem like there would be that many people that are interested in paying two or three times as much to get their food brought to them as they would to just go get it themselves. But it is, it's never, I mean, as much, as often as I want to do it, there's people that will pay for it. And, so that's a good way to make some extra cash. Tutoring, giving lessons. If you, maybe you're, you know, skilled at an instrument or you have some kind of, teaching background and you can offer some private, lessons in that. That's a great way to make, I mean, some of those people are charging 40, 50 bucks an hour, meeting in people's homes or at their own home. You can sell things. All of us probably have junk around our house that we don't use anymore that maybe someone else could get some good out of. So selling some stuff that you have, maybe it's collections that you don't ever look at anymore or you have too many of something. Babysitting, that's a fairly easy one. Dog walking, pet sitting, you see signs out all the time for, I'll come scoop the poop in your backyard for so many dollars per hour or so many, dollars per yard or whatever. There's so many things around that. Cleaning houses, there's tons of opportunities for that. Mowing yards, Dave Ramsey always says that rich people are afraid of leaves. So get out there and, go clean up people's leaves. And, if they've got the money, they'll pay you to do it because they don't want to do it. So, there's yard work to do. Obviously we're getting into that season that's kind of fresh on our minds, because the grass is starting to grow. Etsy, there's all kinds of online stores. You can, if you're creative or you like making things, there's all kinds of opportunities that, you can do that whenever you want from home. You can sell them online. If you're handy at all, there's people like me who are not handy that will hire you to come to our house and fix something that is probably really easy. You could just look up a YouTube video for it, but, we don't really know how to do it or want to do it. So I would fall in that category. Facebook Marketplace Flipper. I don't know if you guys ever see stuff on Facebook Marketplace. People are buying these old dressers for $5 and then they sand them and stain them and put some new hardware on them and they sell them for 200 bucks or something. There's all kinds of stuff you can flip on Facebook Marketplace. Part-time jobs. There's all kinds of places around town that are always hiring for various different things. There's seasonal work. Like I mentioned, the weather's getting nice. So there's a lot of, outdoor things that are starting to pick up. In the wintertime, you got all kinds of retailers hiring for Christmas time. You got UPS and FedEx and all these places that are hiring extra workers. And so, there's just a lot of things that you can do. This is like, a very short list of hundreds of things that you could do. If you're looking for ways to earn some more money, I saw an Instagram reel today that, some guy was charging $12 a trash can to come power wash out your trash cans. And he's like, you do 20 of these a day and you earn, however many dollars. He had the math on there and, it was like, over $1,000 a week if you go around spraying people's trash cans out. I'm not paying anybody to come power wash my trash can. Maybe you have extra money and you want to pay someone to power wash your trash can. But there's so many different things. You get a power washer and go clean your neighbor's driveway or blow off their fence or their house or something. There's just a lot of extra things that you can do. If you have some kind of a skill, there's, other options. I mean, people like me that I'm not super skilled in a lot of things, but I don't really mind doing hard work. So, if I have the ability to do it, maybe I'm interested in doing that. So, but if you have a skill in a certain area, if you're handy and you can build things or you can, maybe you're a woodworker and you enjoy doing that, There's lots of things that you can do to kind of earn some extra money on the side. And the good thing about a lot of this stuff is you can do it after work hours. You can do it on the weekends. You can do it in the evenings. You can do it. Some of it you can do when your kids go to bed. If you have kids, you can, you know, there's just all kinds of flexibility with some of this stuff. And I think a lot of times we just think, well, I only make $25,000 a year, so there's not really anything else I can do other than try and cut my expenses. And sometimes there is more you can do. There's other things for a season. None of the things I'm going to suggest tonight with earning more money or spending less money, I'm not suggesting any of it as like a lifestyle change for the rest of your life, because, you know, all of these things are going to require you to be away from your family more often. You're going to be more tired. You know, there's going to be a sacrifice, a sacrificial element to these things. But for a season, if we're really diligent about trying to get out of debt, or we're trying to save up for a big purchase, or we want to go on vacation, or we're building a house, or we're, you know, my wife's going to stay at home with the kids. Like, there's other things that we can do to kind of make some extra funds. And so this is just a list of a few examples of that. Just some personal examples from my own life. So when I was a year old, my parents moved from North Missouri on the farm. 1985, they were farming, and there was a drought that year, and the farming just went bad. And so they went broke farming, and they left my hometown in North Missouri and moved down to Kansas City area. My dad got a job at Marion Laboratories, which is where he still works now. It's called Catalent now, but he got a job up there. He also was working in the evenings after he got home from that. He was working at the apartment complex where we lived. He would, you know, fix people's blinds, or, you know, go over and fix something that was broken, or he checked on the pool at the apartment complex, and he just did like handyman things around the apartment complex. I'm guessing they took some off of the rent, or they paid him a little bit or something for that. So he was doing that on the side. And then my mom, she had some friends in the apartment complex at the time. She was staying home with me. I was a year old. And so she started staying home, or started watching other people's kids in the apartment complex. She started doing babysitting for one lady in the apartment complex, and then another person. And that grew. She's still doing babysitting to this day. I'm 39. So she's been doing it for 38 years now. So she started babysitting as, you know, just a way to get some extra money coming in. And it ended up being a way that she felt like she could stay home with her own kids, or be available if we needed, you know, to be picked up from school because we were sick, or a field trip, or something comes up and she wants to be available. That was one of the ways that she was able to contribute to the finances of the house, while also still being a stay-at-home mom. And so so that was an example from my childhood that my parents did. For me and Brenda in our own life, Brenda went through nursing school within the first few years of our marriage. And so while she was going through nursing school, she was working as a server. And the more nursing, you know, the more intense nursing school got, the less hours she could work. And so I picked up a second job delivering pizzas. I worked at the bank at the time. Friday and Saturday nights, I'd go deliver pizzas. I think I did that for, I don't know, 6 or 8 months or something like that. Just as a short term, hey, we need to bridge the gap between her finishing school and her starting her new job as a nurse. And so so we did that for a period of time. And then, as I mentioned, the last few years, I've been doing Uber Eats on the side, you know, just for a season as we're building our house. Or like when the pandemic hit, I had just quit my job at the bank, and I hadn't started working at the church yet, so I had kind of this weird overlap time that I started delivering for Uber Eats at that time. So there's seasons, and like in my life, there's been seasons where, you know, we're in a pinch for some reason, or we want to do something extra. I've got a good friend of mine that does Uber even now to save up money for vacations. So him and his wife both have their own professional jobs, and it pays all of their bills and all of that. But if they want to take a family vacation, they need $3,000 or whatever. You know, for a month or two, he'll, you know, do Uber and earn a few thousand extra dollars, and that'll pay for their vacation. And so, just things like that. There's just seasons that we go through where maybe it's beneficial to have. These are not jobs that maybe you're going to look at as a long-term career, but maybe just, ways that you can, you know, earn a little bit extra money to get you through, the current time. So, there's a couple of quotes that, one of them is from Dave Ramsey that I really like. He says, there's a great place to go when you're broke, to work. And it's just, it for some reason, it doesn't always occur to people that, like, hey, things are not going really well financially right now. there's a good place to handle that. If you need more money, there's places that will pay you to come show up and do a job and then, you know, go home. And so go to work. Thomas Edison, there's a quote I saw from him that says, opportunity is missed by most people because it is dressed in overalls and looks like work. And so sometimes people just don't see what's in front of them because, you know, they're focused on other things. And but the more intentional you get about one area of your finances, the more your eyes open to other areas of finances that maybe you hadn't considered before. I'm not a huge fan of just working all the time, but the more I think about, okay, well, if I just worked, you know, one extra day a week, I could get this much, you know, of my house paid off faster. I could save up this much more for this trip we want to go on. And so you start kind of running the numbers and balancing it out. Okay, would this work or this work? Okay, for a few months, I think we could do this. And so there's just some opportunities there. So on your handout, I give you like a little blank for you to write in what's something you could do to increase your current income. So if you are looking to increase your income, are there any things that I mentioned or anything you can kind of start thinking of? You don't have to answer that tonight, but is there anything, you know, else that you think, hey, I have some skill in this area. Maybe I could do this extra thing, just as an idea for you to think about ways to do a little bit of that. So so one side of the equation is, can you earn any more money by doing any of these other things? The other side is the spending less side. And before I get into that, I want to give you guys some statistics before we get into some kind of practical ideas for that. So there's this site called Making Sense of Sense. And in 2023, they published this article that said the average U.S. home has 300,000 items in it. Now, that includes every individual fork and spoon and pencil in your junk drawer and all that stuff. So it sounds like a lot. But if you've ever moved, I'm in the process of moving now. You feel every one of those 300,000 items as you box them all up and decide why we still have these and why do I still have my yearbook from my fifth grade elementary school class or this picture that I drew for my parents in 1992. Like, do I really need these things? And you start to realize, like, we have a lot of stuff in our houses, and that's kind of a symptom of the problem, which is what we're going to get into here in just a minute. But also, in addition to the 300,000 items that the average U.S. household has, nearly 10% of households also rent a storage unit. The storage unit industry is, like, out of control. If you guys, every time something is being built, it seems like it's another storage facility somewhere. There's one by Stat Brothers now. There's one that they just built in Peculiar on the highway. They are, like, all over the place because we just, Americans have so much stuff. We want more and more things. Everything that we see someone else has, we want it. And then after we play with it for a few days, then we're tired of it. And then we don't want to throw it away because that seems like a waste. And we can't sell it anymore because now it's not worth anything. And part of it's broken, or, you know, my kids threw it and now it's not working right or whatever. Like, but we end up keeping it, and it just kind of junks up our house and it junks up our life. And then we get a storage unit because everything's too full in the house, so we move it out there, and then we're paying $100 a month for a storage unit just to store stuff that eventually we're going to get in there and throw it all away anyways. And it's a cycle of just stuff. Americans like stuff. The average household in 1950, or the average home, sorry, in 1950 was about 1,000 square feet, and by 2015 the average was over 2,600 square feet. And so we build these houses to fit all of our stuff, and then we got to fill them with stuff. So then we buy more stuff to fill them up, and then it gets too full, and then we got to get a storage unit to put it all in. And so it's like this cycle. And then we finally go clean out the storage unit, only to have to refill it because we've refilled our houses of things. And so it just becomes this cycle. And the last thing I put up there is keeping up with the Joneses has taken on a whole new meaning. When I was a kid, that phrase keeping up with the Joneses was like, you know, the neighbor next door across the street gets a new car, and now, you know, other people on the block want to get a new car, or you see him riding around on his new riding mower, and it's like, well, we need a riding mower. I'm tired of pushing it. Let's get a riding mower, you know, and it was those kinds of things that you just were, like, you would compare yourself with this other family, and why they have this, maybe we should get a new one. It's probably time for us as well. But now, you don't even have to know anybody. You don't have to be out and about and see what other people have. It's on your phone. It's on Facebook. It's on Instagram. It's on TikTok, whatever generation you fall in, whichever one of those apps you use. We see it all the time. It's always in front of us. There's our friends, or it's people we don't even know, and they're showing us their, for me, all the videos I get is, if you're building a house, here's five things you don't want to miss having in your new home. And it's like, you know, these tens of thousands of dollar additions that it's like, well, yeah, that would be cool to have, but I'm not going to, you know, spend the money on it. But it is cool to watch those videos and see what kind of cool stuff we could do, because we're building a house, and while we're doing it, we might as well do this. And then it's like, check out this new backyard, and it's, you know, all this cool fancy stuff, and they got a pool, and they got, you know, all these things going on. Or it's just constantly thrown at us. The consumer mindset of just, we want what other people have. They want to promote that they have all these really cool things. And, you don't even have to know these people in order to start getting kind of sucked in by, oh, well, I should get something like that. And then, like, you know, just click the link in the description below and you can, you know, it takes you straight to Amazon. You can get it tomorrow. And, we're like, oh, great. This is awesome. And again, it's going to break. We're not going to be excited about it 2 weeks from now. It's going to go in a drunk drawer somewhere. Eventually we're going to throw it out, or we're going to put it in a storage unit. And, that's just how it goes. So keeping up with the Joneses is not, just your friends anymore. It's everybody. It's all around us all the time. And, so obviously I none of this is to talk about like how, you know, having nice things is a bad thing. I don't have a problem with people having nice things. I have some of the same tendencies, right? We all are kind of susceptible to just wanting to buy things and wanting to get things. But in 2 Corinthians 10:12, you can turn there if you want, or it's on the screen. It says, "For we dare not make ourselves of the number or compare ourselves with some that commend themselves, but they, measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves, are not wise." And so we do talk about that from time to time around here, that you know, comparing ourselves with one another is unwise. And that really is, there's danger in that. There's another verse, if you go back to Exodus chapter 20, this is the Ten Commandments. This is the tenth of the Ten Commandments. And it says, "Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's." And it does get a little more complicated when your neighbors are posting stuff on Facebook or Instagram about all the cool stuff that they have. It's a little harder to not kind of want some of those things for ourselves. And again, it's not about the stuff, but we shouldn't be comparing ourselves with other people. And if you compare yourself with other people, that you're never going to be happy. It's never going to fulfill what you need. Hopefully in this church, we know that, you know, Jesus Christ is the only one that will fulfill what we need. But sometimes it is easy to kind of get sucked into the idea that if I just had this one thing, I would really enjoy it and I would get a lot of value out of it, and maybe would, maybe wouldn't. But we tend to put a lot of value on things, and, it really shouldn't be so much about the things. And, there's dangers with comparing yourself. I don't know about you guys, but if in the past when I compare myself with somebody else, I either think, number one, oh, at least I'm not as bad as that person, right? And that's a really dangerous game to play. We are all sinners, right? For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. There's tons of verses in the Bible reminding us to mind our pride and not compare ourselves thinking that we're better than somebody, or I would never fall into that trap, or I would never make that dumb of a purchase. I would never waste my money the way that person wastes it, right? That's one danger we can fall into. Or it could go the other way and think, why don't I just have what they have? It's not fair that they have what I don't have. I work hard. I do this. I. And so comparing ourselves with ourselves is never a good idea, because there's no fulfillment in it. And Rachel Cruz, that's Dave Ramsey's daughter. She's one of the personalities, talks on their show and stuff. She says that comparison is the thief of joy. And that's really true, that, you know, the more that we compare ourselves with other people, or what they have that we don't have, it doesn't really feel good in the end of that, right? I mean, it always just feels like, you know, like you never can quite get enough. And so, it does steal your joy, and that we should be content with the things that we have. We should be, you know, happy with where we are, and we should feel blessed that we live in the country that we live in. We should feel fortunate that we're in a church that preaches the word of God, that we have, you know, family members that are healthy, like, you know, all the things that we're blessed with. We tend to look beyond those things at the things that we don't have. And, that is kind of our human nature. But there's a verse in Joshua chapter 24. I had this verse when I was a kid growing up. I had this verse hanging. My parents had it on a plaque in our house. And so I've seen this verse since I was a kid. It says, "And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom ye will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land ye dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." And so that really is what it comes down to when it comes to comparing and, you know, trying to match what somebody else has. No two scenarios are the same, right? Some people make more than others. Some people make less than others. Some people have more debt than others. Some people have less. Like, there's no apples to apples comparison that we can make anyways. But that's not the things that we see. When we see things online, we don't see like the debt that's piling up to keep this lifestyle up so they can promote it as if they are doing so great, right? We see people on vacations when they post it on social media. Well, they're not on vacation all the time. I also go on vacations from time to time. But when we look at it, we're like, man, I wish I was there. You know, I wish I was in that place. I wish I could go on a trip like that. And then we do go on a trip like that, and we forget all about that, right? We just only want to see or only want to think about how unfair it is maybe when we see other people having it. So there's just some danger in comparing ourselves. And so, you know, we need to be thinking about that and be mindful of that as we talk about ways to cut costs, because it does get very difficult to cut costs if our focus is on what other people have and not on what Joshua 24 says, which is, I'm going to serve the Lord. I don't know about other people's house. I don't know the way that other people do their finances. But for me and my house, for me and my wife, I would like for my finances to honor and glorify the Lord. And so I'm going to be as good of a steward as I can of those things. I'm going to buy some nice things that I want. I'm not saying I only buy needs. But I'm going to take care of my kids. I'm going to take care of my wife. We're going to take care of our house. And if we have money left over, then we're going to do some fun stuff with it. But I'm not going to try to keep up with somebody else's lifestyle, right? Me and my wife have our own goals, and as long as we're unified on it, hopefully I can keep the outside distractions out, and for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. So that's kind of the goal of this as we get into the practical things. So ways to spend less. This is another one of the, just like ways you can earn more, there's, you know, probably thousands of ways you could spend less. There's another QR code. There's another article from Ramsey's website. They've got some good ideas on there. I did not include all of them. I included some that they don't have. But the first one, getting out of debt. We'll talk a lot about this week and next week both. We'll focus more on it next week than this week. But if you were to just sit down and look at where you spent your money, if you did that exercise and you kind of tracked, okay, this is where I spent all my money, probably a decent chunk of your income went to debt of some kind. We talked last week about how the average car payment in the U.S. is around $650 a month right now. I've got some other statistics that says the average, like in personal loans, is around $517. Average student loan payment is around $307 a month. The average credit card payment is around $272 a month. And then they had a miscellaneous debt, so that could be debt to family members. It could be payday loans. I don't know. It's all kinds of other debt. Average is around $275. And those amounts just like add up, you know. I mean, you just think about how many hundreds of dollars or maybe thousands of dollars are gone from your budget because of these other these debts that are taking it before you really even get to do anything with it. And especially like on credit cards and student loans and things like that, we're spending so much of our current income and energy on things that happened months ago, years ago, decades ago, maybe. And so getting out of debt is a huge way that we can cut expenses out of our budget. And I do know that that's easier said than done. And some of us are in different situations where, you know, maybe that's going to be a really long haul. But that's where it goes back to, it's going to hit the rest of these things. How can we cut expenses to get out of debt even faster? And what can we do on the income side to get out of debt even faster? You know, what if you made an extra $1,000 a month? How quickly would that expedite things? Maybe you're in a really deep hole. Maybe you need $2,000 a month extra. You know, those are options. There are ways to do that. You know, you might be really tired for a season, but if it gets you and sets you up for success long term by, you know, working really, really hard, a lot of hours for the next couple years, you know, is that worth it? That's a decision for you and your spouse to make, or just you if you're not married. But But like I said, there's been seasons in my wife and I's life where that has been something that's been important to us. So we'll hit more on Get Out of Debt next week. We'll talk a lot about the debt snowball and ways to kind of systematically go through the debts. But for now, we'll just stop there on getting out of debt. But eating at home, I talked a little bit about this last week. The stat I have on that is the average American spends $1,200 a year on fast food. So if you break that down, it's $100 a month. It's like $25 a week. If you go any fast food around here, that's like two visits, maybe three if you're getting, you know, if you're eating really cheap. So, you know, that's the average. And then it also said that the average American household, so this is for a family, spends about 10% of their income on eating out. And we talked about last week the average income for Cass County is around $77,000 a year. So that'd be about $7,700 a year on eating out. Now that's fast food, that's, you know, dine-in restaurants, all of that combined. But that's a lot of money, right? I mean, that's $600 a month, $650 a month. If you've got kids and you take them out to a restaurant, it can get really pricey really fast. So, you know, there's some accuracy in those numbers. Even if you did after taxes come out, on a $77,000 income, that's about $58,000 a year. 10% of that's around $6,000 a year, so that's about $500 a month on eating out. That's the average. Now, again, we're not comparing ourselves with ourselves, but if the average family is spending $500 a month on eating out, if they were to cut that out completely, that's an extra $500 that could go towards debt or saving for a trip or paying off, you know, their house or whatever. There's other things we could do with that money. So there's some extra money in there. Look for unused subscriptions. I don't know how many subscriptions you guys have, but Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu, YouTube TV, gym memberships, Audible, Apple Music, Spotify, like there's just so many of them, right? There's just tons and tons and tons of them that you can get set up on this monthly reoccurring bill that sometimes we forget about or we're not even using. I mean, how often do you actually go on to Netflix or Disney Plus or whatever the thing is? And if you're spending too much time on there, maybe go back to the earn more side of things and you can work and earn a little bit more money and stop spending so much time on those things. So there's areas there that we could maybe cut out on memberships. Look for free or cheap family or date outings. So there's a lot of things that, a quick Google on free or cheap things to do in Kansas City or in Harrisonville or wherever. You can get a good list of stuff. You can go out and do all kinds of things that are free or cheap. You know, my wife and I like to go on a date night every once in a while. Sometimes that's let's go sit down at a, you know, semi-nice restaurant. Let's go out and do something. We'll go to Top Golf or go do some kind of fun activity. But you could drop a couple $100 pretty easy on a night like that, especially if you have to pay for somebody to watch your kids. You know, it can get really expensive to go out on a date. So, you know, maybe instead of going out on a date like that, you ship the kids off to grandma's house and you have a movie night at home and you eat at home and, you know, you go to a park or you do something else. There's free things that you can do. And, you know, they're maybe not, if you're dating somebody, it's maybe not as fun and exciting to take them to a park because you're trying to save money. But if you're married and you're unified on your goals and you both know, like, this is a sacrifice that we're willing to make for the time being. I still want to spend time with you. Let's go out and do something together. But you don't have to spend money to impress the person. You're already married and both of you guys have the same goals. And so, you know, that would be an option. Brenda and I from time to time have gone on a Uber Eats date. And so I'll sign into Uber Eats and she'll come with me and we'll drive around for like 5 or 6 hours delivering food, talking, spending time together, making money together. You know, she can help hold the drinks so they don't spill. I got somebody to talk to in the car. We listen to music, we listen to podcasts, whatever. And then at some point, you know, when we're both hungry, we just pause the app. We don't want any more orders. We go sit down at a restaurant for an hour and eat and talk there and have our own date, get back in the car, do it a little bit longer. And we might make a couple $100 that night, spend, you know, $50 or $75 on a good meal. And so we're ahead for the night. So that's a date night that we've done, I don't know, 5 or 6 times over the last couple of years. It's a way that, you know, we can spend time together, we can have a date, but we're making more money than we're spending. So there's lots of like creative ways you can do this. If you take advantage of some of those other, you know, you're going to babysit somebody's kids for an evening, you know, to try and make some money so they can go on a date. Well, you and your spouse can still have that time together. Now, depending on the kids, it may not be super easy to have time to, like, talk, you know, if these kids are crazy and wild and stuff. But, you know, if you're dog sitting or if you're going to walk somebody's dog, take your spouse with you. Go for a walk with the dogs and, you know, you can earn some money while you're on a date that way. So there's lots of things you can do with that. There's family ideas for that as well. Coupons. I will be upfront and honest with you. I'm not a big coupon person. I don't like the awkwardness of the interaction of trying to use a coupon. But from time to time, there are, you know, really good options that you can save some money that way. I had an oil change in December out at the Kia dealership in Lee Summit. I went out there. They're checking my car in, and there's this big TV screen behind the guy, and it's scrolling with all the, you know, new cars on it and all this stuff. But one of the screens that it slides by is like, get $25 off your service today or something like that. So I go and I sit down in the waiting room. They change the oil. I come back, tells me whatever the total was. And I'm like, hey, what's the deal with that $25 off thing on the screen? And he's like, what is it? And I'm like, I don't know, just watch. It'll scroll back around. And he's like, I haven't even seen it. Let me go ask. And so he goes and asks and he comes back and just takes $25 off the oil change. He's like, yeah, it's just a deal we have going on, I guess. I didn't even know about it. There's no minimum or whatever. So he just took $25 off the bill. Just things like that. There's just opportunities to, you know, save a little bit of money here and there. If you're more, like really into it, have you guys seen those like extreme couponing shows? Some people go like way crazy with it and, you know, they get like a basket full of groceries for like $4 or something because they, you know, check out all these deals on all these coupons. I'm not that, you know, crazy about it, but, there are some options out there for, you know, sign up for these like rewards programs and, you know, you get a free meal on your birthday at some of these places. I don't know. Just, you know, look for opportunities to cut costs, on the things that maybe you're doing already, place that you might go eat already. If you can, I mean, I was going to get my oil change at that place regardless of the $25 deal. I just happened to see it, mentioned it, and got $25 off. So there's things that you can do that with that, that come along. So, control your impulse spending. That is easier said than done. But you can do that in a lot of different ways too. Since COVID, it's made a lot of things obviously more complicated, but some things have been a little bit better, right? I don't know how many of you guys have done grocery pickup instead of having to go in and shop for your groceries. That's a good way to cut down on impulse spending, right? You're not walking up and down all these aisles looking at everything. You just go on the app, tell it all the things you want, and they bring it out to your car. So that can cut down on some things that you might think you want because you happen to see it. It's also going to save you a lot of time. Sometimes if you think about like, okay, I really want this thing. I see it. I spend a lot of time scrolling through. I am trying to limit myself because it's so tempting, but I scroll through Facebook Marketplace, right? We're moving into our new house. I got a list of things that I kind of want to get for the new house. You know, if the price is right kind of a thing. So I'll scroll through Facebook Marketplace and I'm looking for different things on there. And, I'll see something and I'll take it to Brenda and I'm like, hey, what do you think about this? Whatever, mower or something I see on there. And she's like, well, I think we need to do this other thing first. I'm like, you're right. I shouldn't even be looking at this stuff. I don't know why I'm looking at it. But I see it and I kind of want it, you know. But if I wait like a day or two, then I don't even, you know, somebody else buys it. I don't see it on there anymore. You know, I don't even think I need it anymore. Just kind of in that moment, I'm just kind of in this mode like, yeah, I need to get this one thing. If I don't buy this one, I'm never going to find a deal this good again, or I'm never going to find this exact model of one that I want, or it's the right color, or it's the right whatever. And if I don't buy this one, I'm going to miss out. There's going to be more, you know. You're never really going to miss out on it. There's never like a too good to be true deal. If it's not the right time and your spouse isn't in agreement, you know, if you just wait a couple days on your impulse spending, a lot of those purchases, a week from then, you won't even remember that you looked at it, or that you looked at it and that you wanted it. And so, you know, giving yourself like a cool down period of some kind will help with impulse spending, especially on bigger items. I think that's all I want to say about that one. Pay cash. This is, one of the best ways to spend less money. There's this whole idea behind the way that we spend money and the way that we even just like go into the grocery store. 20 years ago, you know, you go to the grocery store, it's $100, you hand them a $100 bill or a couple 50s or whatever, you hand them cash, they give you your groceries, you've handed them the cash and you leave, right? But then with the credit cards and debit cards being a lot more prevalent, now you go and it's $100 or now it's $150 or whatever it is, and now we swipe our card or we stick our card in or we tap it on the thing. And we keep our card and we get the groceries. And so it seems like a small, like, change, but instead of trading, I'm going to give you this and you're going to give me my groceries. Now you're just going to give me my groceries and I don't have to give you anything. Like, there's like a mindset change that it's subtle, but, and we know that, okay, the money comes out of our bank account or the money comes on our credit card bill or whatever, but there's something different than actually handing the person cash or handing the person something in exchange for what we're getting. And so, it's a small, like, subtle change, but, retailers know, they do studies and spend millions and millions of dollars figuring out the most effective ways to get, you know, their per receipt or per transaction prices up, right? They want you to buy the candy bars and the gum, and they want your kids to see that little trinkety toy that's $3 and it's not that big of a deal, just throw it on the cart or whatever. You know, they want you to see all the stuff at the registers because they can get the prices up just a little bit more at the register. And if you're not exchanging something with them anymore, it changes the way that you view that transaction. And now you can Apple Pay, right? Or pay with Samsung Pay if you have an Android. You can do it from your phone. Okay, you're holding your phone, you're scrolling through while they're ringing everything up. They tell you the total. You just tap that side button, hold your phone close to the thing. You don't even have to get anything out of your pocket. You don't have to hand them anything. You're not even touching your card anymore. So it's not like, I mean, you know in your head, like, okay, it's real money coming out of my bank account. But there's no, you don't even get something out of your pocket. It's something you're already holding, and you just hold it close, and now they give you all your stuff, and you walk out, and you never even touched your card or your anything having to do with your bank account. It almost feels like you're not spending the money because it's so, like, frictionless. There's no, hesitation there. And if you guys have been on a cruise recently, or if you've been to Disney and stayed, like, on their resort, they give you, like, these little bracelets. And all your stuff is contained in that bracelet. And they say, okay, you know, this way you don't have to carry your wallet around with you. Who wants to carry their wallet with them on vacation? You don't have to have cash, and you get coins back, and you're trying to ride a ride. Now your coins are falling out of your pocket. Don't even deal with all that. Just use the wristband. We'll connect it to your bank account, to your credit card or whatever. And everywhere you go, all the gift shops, or if you're on a cruise, all the, you know, the drinks or the stores that you can buy stuff at, you just tap your wrist and the transaction goes to your account, and then at the end of the trip, you get a list of all the charges that you had that trip, and you're like, oh my gosh, I spent this much on this, because it's just so easy. You can just tap really fast, you know? You don't even have to think about it. You don't have to get anything out of your wallet. And so it becomes easier and easier. So, but when you pay cash, and granted, it's not always an option. You can't always pay cash for things. You're buying something online or whatever. You can't obviously pay cash for it. But as often as you can pay cash for it, it's going to help you in a couple ways. It's going to help you think more about the purchase. So I told you guys we haven't borrowed money on anything but a home for over a decade now. And so the last couple cars we bought was like $15,000 car. Well, when you save up $15,000 in cash, that takes some time, right? Some years of working and saving and sacrificing to put this money in a savings account. And then the day comes where it's like, okay, I think we got enough. We can finally start shopping for this car. So, you know, I'm doing all the research. I'm like, well, if I'm going to be spending this money I've been saving up for the last 3 years, I want to make sure it's exactly what I want, and I'm going to try and get the best deal on it as I can because I don't want to spend more of this savings account that I've been looking at for this last – every time you log into your bank account, you see it sitting there, and it just kind of gives you a little bit of assurance. You know, it's like, man, okay, if something really bad happened, we have this cushion to fall back on. Well, if I'm going to spend that huge chunk of money all at one time on a car or a trip or something like that, a big expense – I'm going to try and do my research on it and get the best deal that I can. And when you do that, you're going to tend to spend less. You know, when you're negotiating and you have cash, it's like, okay, I really want to part with as little of this cash as I can. What's the best deal I can get on this item, on this car, on this fridge, on this vacation or whatever? I'm going to look for the best deal. I'm going to try and negotiate it down because I want to part with as little of my cash as I can. Whereas if you go into a car dealership and you want to buy a $15,000 car and you're buying it on payments, and they say, you know, it's going to be $600 a month. And it's like, well, if you get, you know, you can get this other option, it'll be $603 a month, but you can have the leather seats or you can get the moonroof or you can get the whatever, you know, or you can add the warranty. It's going to add, you know, $10 a month to your payment or $15 a month to your payment. When your mind is thinking, well, it's like $10 or $15 to add that thing. It's like, well, that's not that big of a deal. But on a 6-year loan, you know, that might be $1,000 extra that you're paying for this item. And maybe it's something you want and maybe it's worth it and all of that, but you start thinking about those things whenever it's like cash that you're actually handing over to this person that you've had to save and sacrifice to get to, and now you're going to hand it over to somebody in exchange for this vehicle or whatever the item is. you tend to spend less on those things because you've sacrificed on the front end versus having to sacrifice in debt payments in the long run. Dealing with credit cards specifically, there's this company called Dun & Bradstreet. They did a study that found when people use credit cards, they spend on average 12 to 18% more than people who spend cash. That shows up in a number of different ways. Maybe, you know, you buy an extra of something or you pay for the person that's with you. Hey, I'll get it today. You know, you can get me next time or whatever. Whereas if I only got 20 bucks in my pocket and I'm with somebody, it's like, okay, you know, if I'm going to get them, it's going to cost me like all the 20 bucks I have with me. Whereas on a credit card, you don't have that. Or, you're paying with it on a credit card, you're more likely to, you know, maybe splurge for a little upgrade like I was talking about on the cars. So on average, people with a credit card spend 12 to 18% more. That's an average. I know some people are like, well, I only use it for these things and I would have bought it anyways. You know, and that's fine. But on average, 12 to 18% more, on credit cards. So there's so many things, there's new things coming out all the time too. If you guys shop online at all, you see Klarna or Affirm or Afterpay. They're these, you know, four easy payments of whatever. They take your total amount and then they just divide it into four payments. And so you can pay, you know, I'm going to buy a $100 item today, or you could just pay $25 today. And it's like, well, that sounds good. What's the catch? Oh, you got to pay $25 next month and the next month and the next month. And once you've done four payments of that, then you're done. And so the problem with that is now a lot of those don't have any fees. There's no interest if you pay, you know, the four payments on time or whatever. And so you think, well, there's no harm in doing that because I'm still paying $100. It's not like I'm getting charged a fee to use that service. But what Klarna advertises, that's just one of those companies, they advertise to like their merchants, people who, you know, they want to be offered on this company's website. They say, if you use our service, on average, customers will spend 45% more if you offer Klarna, versus if you don't. And so that's kind of their pitch to get included on these companies' websites as a payment option. Because if you look at it, okay, I know I'm going to spend $100 on this thing I'm buying today. And then you get to the checkout and it's like, oh, it's only 25 bucks. I should get two of them. I'll get one for my wife and one for me. You know, it's like, well, that's only $50. That's still even less than I was planning on paying. But then you don't think about, oh, next month I'm going to pay it again and the next month and the next month. And now I've spent twice as much as I was going to spend just because it offered a smaller price, right? Or, you know, I have a pair of pants in my shopping cart, but I should get the shirt that goes with it or the shoes that go with it because, you know, it's less than what I was expecting to spend today anyways. I'll just budget for it again next month, or most people don't budget for it next month. And so on average, they spend 45% more. And so there's when these companies are spending millions and millions of dollars on ways to get through the psychology of how can we get people to pay more on average, how can we get them to buy more of our things than they used to, there's so much stuff that goes into that. That as consumers, we don't really even think about a lot of times, or we don't even really pay that close of attention to. We just think, oh, this is convenient. It'll just be easier for me to do it this way than versus this way. But there's a lot of data that goes into that, and a lot of studies and things that go into how you spend your money and how to get you to spend a little bit more. And so the value in paying cash is a big one because obviously you only have so much cash. If you have cash in your hand, you can only spend what you have. You can't spend more cash than you have, because they're not going to give you the thing. Hey, your total today is $100. Well, I only got $75. Is that okay? No, it's not okay. You go, oh, it's $100, you know, like, why don't you pay me the $75 and then you can put the rest on your card, you know? But you can only pay what you can pay with cash. And so, that can be a huge kind of shift in your spending, on that way. Shopping around. There's so many things that that we can shop around on. Just a few examples for you guys tonight. Insurance. So a lot of times health insurance, you can't shop around a whole lot because that's through your employer usually. But like car insurance, homeowners insurance, things like that. A lot of people don't really think about shopping around for those things. I had State Farm. My parents had State Farm since I was a kid. When I started driving, I got State Farm. I had it, you know, well into our marriage. And then, you know, I find out, oh, there's like other companies you can switch to. You see all these Geico can save 15% or more in 15 minutes or whatever their thing is. And, but every insurance company on TV, it's like, you know, so people save on average $800 if they switch to our company. And, if you shop that stuff around a little bit, you can find better deals on that. If you have Farmers or State Farm or Geico or some, you know, a big major nationwide company like that, if you go into your agent's office or you call them, they can only give you other options. So like when I had State Farm, the only thing they could tell me was what other State Farm options they could give me, right? They couldn't tell me what Farmers or somebody else would be. But there's insurance brokers, and you can, you know, it doesn't cost anything extra to go with a broker. I've got an insurance broker that I use. So usually about every year or 18 months, I'll shoot the lady an email. Hey, you know, can you shop around my rates again real quick? And so within a day or two, she'll send me here, you know, here's the better, you know, here's a little bit better deal with this company, or, you know, your homeowner's insurance will go down a little bit, but your car insurance is going to go up. But overall, you're going to save money by switching to this other company. I don't care what insurance company I have. Really, I mean, as long as they're going to pay the claim, if I have one, you know, that's all I really care about. I just want the best deal on the insurance when I can get it. So shopping around for insurance, a lot of people don't really think about that, but that's an area that you can save a lot of money. And it's not like you have to do all the legwork and go to each company's website and type in all your details. And you can, you know, you can have an insurance broker just contact all of these different companies for you and shop the best rates, you know, in minutes. And so that's a big one with insurance. Your home internet, you know, if you guys have internet or cable or something like that, I don't know how many people still have cable anymore, but, you know, you can shop those things around. There's multiple companies that offer internet service at your house. You know, sometimes you sign up and it's like, we'll give you, you know, $40 a month for the first year. And it's like, well, that sounds great. And then a year later, it's $80 a month. And it's like, well, that wasn't what I was expecting. Maybe I should shop this around. But oftentimes we don't. We just kind of stick with what we have because it works and we don't have any problems with it. So shopping those kinds of things around. Your cell phone, you can shop around cell phone. That's a little more complicated to switch. But, you know, if it's time to get a new phone anyways, what kind of deals are out there? Does anybody have a promotion going on that I can save monthly and still have good coverage? Credit card interest rates. Some credit card companies, if you have, you know, debt with them and you've been with them for a while, you can just call them and say, hey, do you have any promotional rates going on? You can lower my interest rate on my credit card balance. You know, if it lowers it a couple percent and you owe, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 on it, that could be a few hundred dollars a year you could save by asking if they can lower your interest rate. Sometimes they'll say no. Medical bills, you know, you can negotiate medical bills. A lot of people don't know that they can do that. It's not always easy if you have insurance, and it can get complicated, but there's some options for that. You know, contact the hospital or the doctor's office and say, listen, I know I owe you this money. It wasn't something I expected. It was a medical emergency. I don't have the money saved up for this. I'd rather not pay on this for the next 5 years. Is there any kind of a deal we can cut? And if I pay you cash today or in 30 days, you know, and then you go get one of those extra jobs and you work hard for 30 days and, you know, you get a couple $1,000 and you get it out of your life. So things like that, you can shop those things around or ask for discounts, things like that to help you save some money. Put a spending freeze on your budget. This would be a very, temporary thing, but, you know, maybe for a season, you and your spouse or you, if you're solo, you say, okay, for the next 30 days, I'm just not going to buy anything unless it's a necessity. And just see if you can make it through 30 days without, you know, eating out, buying something online, you know, paying for some random thing that comes up at your kid's school that you weren't expecting, you know, whatever. Like, can you make it through 30 days of just not spending anything extra? And maybe, you know, maybe you could save a few hundred dollars, maybe $1,000 that way. If you just said, for 30 days, we're not doing anything. We're going to be at home, or we're going to be at work, or we're going to be at church, or we're going to be at family's house. We're not eating out. We're not buying anything more than the necessary groceries. We're not going to go to the movies. We're not going to do these things for 30 days and just see how much of a difference that might make in the budget. And so, again, that QR code will give you a list of even more things you can do. Those are just some ideas of things. But it is interesting, though, the more, like, you try to be intentional about one aspect of what you're doing, like, you know, if you just have this financial goal that you're really determined to hit, you start getting, like, really creative with other things that you can do. What if we did this and we earned a little bit more money over here? What if you got a part-time job and started working a little bit? And what if we didn't spend anything extra for 30 days? And what if we cut this expense? And what if we got rid of our Netflix subscription? Or, you know, what if we did these things? You know, maybe combine a bunch of these things together and think, like, what a difference a month or 3 months or 6 months might make if you kind of combine some of these ideas. And those are just, you know, some ideas of things you can do. But those are really only two things. If you're trying to make a dramatic change in your finances, it's really only two sides of the equation. earn more, spend less, or ideally both of those things together, and make a big make a big momentum swing. Okay, so we've got about 20 minutes left. The homework for this week. So just if you didn't do the homework from last week, looking through your bank account statement and all that, I would suggest maybe you do that as well. But did I put it on the handout? I don't even remember what I put on the handout. Did I put ideas for getting together with your spouse and dreaming about? Okay, so that's the homework. So go out on a free or cheap date, or if you have some extra money in your budget, go out, sit down somewhere, get away from the kids if you have kids, and just try to just talk about, like, what are we trying to accomplish? Like, what would be something, what's a goal that we would like to get to? Maybe it's the student loan payment that's been sitting on in the back burner for the last 5 or 10 years, and we're just, it's $10,000. We're sick and tired of seeing it there. It's stressful. We don't want to think about it anymore. What if we just really worked hard for like 6 months? Do you think we could knock it out? And you start doing the math. Okay, well, that's so much dollars per month. And, or let's say it's 10,000 in 10 months. It's $1,000 a month. Okay, well, if we can earn an extra $1,000 a month, that'll clear it up in 10 months. What if we could earn 1,000 and we could cut our expenses by $500? Well, now we're going to speed it up even faster, get it done in 8 months instead. You know, start like just dreaming about and thinking about like, what would it be like if 6 months from now, you know, we had a $10,000 swing in our finances. Either we had a bunch of money in savings, or we paid off this big debt, or we sold the car. Maybe we get rid of a car because the payment is so high, and we just get something, you know, that's not really nice, that's junky, that will just get us to and from work. And what if we did that? And that would alleviate this huge car payment in our life and give us a little bit of peace. Or maybe it's more fun stuff. Those are kind of like bummer ideas, you know, of fun things to talk to your spouse about is how do we sell our cars and stuff. Maybe it's like, okay, next summer in 2025, we want to go to Mexico, or we want to go on a mission trip to the DR, or we want to go to, I'm tentatively planning a trip to Hungary, hopefully end of this year, early next year. I'm waiting on Kale to get back to me, a mission trip to Hungary. So maybe that would be something you would want to go on. Well, that's probably going to be a $3,000 trip. I don't know exactly what the cost will be when we go, but you know, in the next year, I want to take this mission trip. Okay, well, we need $3,000. How are we going to do that? Well, if we did it over 6 months, that'd be $500. Yeah, $500 a month that we'd have to save. We did it over, you know, so many months. You know, do the math. Figure out what it would cost you to get that thing. Maybe you want to buy something for your house. You know, you want to buy something fun for your house. You know, think about what that's going to cost and figure out how we're going to get there. And you'd be surprised at how creative you can get and how God will just kind of bless those things. It just seems like, you know, if you have a plan and you're being intentional about something, then yeah, I'm not saying that, you know, money's just going to fall from nowhere, but it just does. It seems like somehow God just kind of always shows up in those times. And it's like, oh, hey, look, somebody's doing something good and they're paying attention and they're trying to be intentional. And, you know, they're doing it for my glory. They're trying to be a good steward of the finances that I'm giving them. I'll just kick a little extra to them. Maybe you get a bonus at work that you weren't expecting, or maybe you get a raise you weren't expecting, or maybe the side job that you get, you know, business explodes and like you know, now you're really busy and you're making all kinds of money doing that. I don't know what it is, but it just seems like in the past when I've tried to be intentional about those things, it's just like God just kind of blesses a little bit, you know? And so maybe that would happen in your life as well. But, you know, just kind of dream about, think about something that you guys would like to, a goal that you'd like to work to, together. Maybe it's like, okay, we're living paycheck to paycheck. Things are really tight. But if I could, I would really like to switch jobs and do this other thing that I've thought about for a really long time, but I've never been able to do because we've never been in a financial place where I felt like I could switch and kind of take a little bit of a risk on because we have this debt out here. But if we had that debt knocked out, or if we had $10,000 or $5,000 in our savings account, I'd feel really comfortable about switching to this new job. And I really think I could probably make more money doing that in the long run, but I really just want to try it out. It's something I've thought about for a long time. Or I want to start this business, or I want to do this thing. And, you know, maybe that's like a goal that you would want to work towards. Okay, well, how do we do that? Like, what's that going to take? Let's think about, you know, how can we insulate ourselves from that turning into a nightmare and help that be like a blessing? Maybe you could do that. And maybe you would make more money doing that and have more time at home, and it would be a better work-life balance, and you enjoy it, and something you're passionate about. Maybe it would work out, but you've never felt like you could make that decision because there's just too much debt going on. There's just, we're paycheck to paycheck, and if I miss one paycheck, it's going to ruin everything that we're working towards. And so we'll just save up a couple paychecks worth of an income and then make the change. You know, maybe it's something like that. So just, you know, it doesn't have to be this week necessarily, but sometime, you know, when you and your spouse get a chance to sit down, just think about and dream about, like, what things would we do if we could do whatever we wanted? You know, if we could make these things happen. And then just back your way into it. How would that work? How would we make that happen? And so just having those financial freedom allows us just a lot of leeway when it comes to finances. So next week we're going to talk about more deeply about how to build our budget. So, like, we'll kind of go through line by line. I'm not going to hopefully be really boring with it. I'll try and, you know, kind of go through quickly. But if you're actually trying to build a budget, what does that look like? We'll kind of build a sample one on the screen. We'll talk about getting out of debt. So we'll talk about the debt snowball, how to live life without debt products like credit cards, car loans, student loans, a credit score. A lot of people, like, when I talk about or think about not having credit cards or not borrowing money for things, well, isn't that going to mess up your credit score? Those kinds of questions. So we'll talk about all of that kind of stuff next week. But for tonight, before we wrap up, does anybody have any questions? Last week, that seemed to be a popular thing to ask questions. So if anybody has any questions, I can help or answer those. Or if not, we can. Bob, you got one?
What do you think about, we should budget our tithe.
Our time?
Tithe.
Or a tithe. What do you mean by budget your tithe?
We should have our tithe incorporated into our budget.
For sure. That should be the top line.
How about a tithe to yourself as well?
Like as a form of saving, you mean? Yeah, I think that's a great idea. The budget form that I have, I think I had one last week for everybody. But that budget form, well, at least for me, whenever I do my budget, it's, you know, at the very top is the income for that month. Well, actually, I guess I can get into it now. The way we do our budget. So, like, about, I don't know, 12 or 13 years ago, Brendan and I were making like $3,000 a month, something like that, $2,500, $3,000. I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was something like that. And we got a tax return that year, and we were just kind of getting into budgeting, and we're trying to figure out, okay, how do you budget? You know, what if more of your payments are due at the beginning of the month and you haven't got all your paychecks yet? Like, how do you budget all that out over the course of a month? And we're really trying to figure out, like, logistically what the best way to work that in was. And we made whatever it was, $2,500, $3,000 a month at the time. And that year, our tax return was, like, exactly what we made in a month on average. And, like, she was a server and I worked on commission. So our budget, you know, our income fluctuated from month to month a decent amount. And so that tax return came in and it was, like, exactly what we made on an average month. And so we said, okay, this year for this tax return, what if we just leave that sitting in our checking account so we're 1 month ahead on our budgeting? So now we don't have to guess, okay, what's my paycheck this week going to be, because we're a whole month ahead. And so I'll talk a little bit more about that when we do the budgeting next week. But we've been a month ahead on our income, on our budget for, like, I don't know, 12 years or something like that, because we did that one time with our tax return. And so that helps a lot. So when I sit down and do my budget, I put all the income that I made in February, and then I'm going to spend that money in March, basically. And so for me, I list all the income at the top, and then, yeah, I start going through the list of things. Okay, tithe, we got to do 10% of that, subtract that out. And then savings, you know, subtract out the savings. And, you know, I got my rent or mortgage, and I got my utilities. And kind of, so you do kind of in order of needs, and then you get down to, okay, how much money do I have left down here? And I can do some wants and stuff. But I definitely do think that savings, like, if you're calling it a tithe to yourself, savings is obviously super important. Depending on where you're at, sometimes it's maybe more important to get some debt out of your life so you can save some more. But I will say, even if you're in debt, like, we have, Dave Ramsey calls them sinking funds. But if, you know, like, your property insurance is $1,000 a year, or let's say it's $1,200 a year for easy math, you want to put away $100 a month every month for the year so that when property tax time comes, you have the $1,200 on hand to pay it. So you're not having to try to squeeze $1,200 out of that 1 month's budget. So that's kind of, I think, what you're talking about, just kind of saving up throughout the year for things. Christmas is going to be here in December. You know, figure out kind of how much you think you want to spend and save that much per month so that when you get to December, you have all the money saved and you're not in crisis mode trying to scramble and come up with it. So, yeah, the more you can do that on the front end at the top, yeah, I think that is a good idea. More month left at the end of the money. Yeah, hopefully it's the other way around. Is that me? Sorry. Does anybody else have any questions? Comment? All right, Steve, what's your comment?
All our insurance is due right now or comes up due in April, and we use a broker, like you say, so they can shop around for the best insurance policy for you on whatever you have. And, mm-hmm. of course, it's usually always best if you can bundle it, get everybody. But what they're starting to do, the rumor I'm hearing is, you know, you have like a deductible you have to pay for the first whatever. So if you move your deductible up $500 or $1,000, if you're a good driver, you don't make a lot of claims, if you move that up, you can save on your insurance premiums. Mm-hmm. And if you say, if you do good, and there's also what they call a split deductible for insurance and hail damage, because as we know, there's a lot of that around. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's getting new windows or roofs and stuff like because of hail. So they do a split one where that's a little bit higher than the rest of it. Okay. And that way it'll save you money too. If you don't make a lot of claims, or if you get some hail and it's nothing's leaking, you just kind of let it go or something to the next one maybe or whatever. But that's something to think about too, because if you move your deductible up, it'll save your premium. It'll save you money.
Yeah, for sure.
Ours have been going up. I mean, it's going up a lot.
Yeah. A lot, I've heard of companies, insurance companies in different states dropping. Yeah. Like in Florida, you know, insurance companies not even operating in that state anymore for hurricane claims and things like that. So
I shopped around on our lake property, and they said, well, the house is too old. It's got an old roof. I said, it's a metal roof.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nothing's wrong with it, you know, except it maybe just faded a little bit, but they just go by age. It's age. We don't even want to look at it.
Yeah.
You know,
you got to remember with insurance, they run all these actuarial tables to figure out what are the statistical odds that you're going to have a claim on average. If we've got 1,000 customers and we have three out of 1,000 have a claim every month. What's the math on that? How much is the average claim? How much do we have to bring in order to pay all of our agents and pay all the claims people and still make a profit? And, at a certain point, they get to and say, well, you know, we're having 500 claims out of 1,000. We can't do this anymore. And they just drop it. And so, insurance is a business, and they got to make money. But it does seem like my car insurance keeps going up and up and up. And that's why shopping it around and trying to find the deals. And if you can, if you have enough money in your savings account, you can carry a $2,000 deductible or a $1,000 deductible instead of a $250 deductible. If you've got the cushion to be able to do that and it saves you and it makes the payment worth it, you know, then that could be a good idea. Now, if your car is only worth $5,000, you probably don't want to carry a $2,500 deductible on it. You might switch it to liability only. So it covers you from the big medical stuff or whatever.
You know, if somebody run into you, then, you know, you just get liability. But, we had property we owned. It went up from $2,800 a year to $5,200 in 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Double, almost double.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know when it's going to stop.
Yeah. Yeah, we're weighing it out right now on the car I told you guys last week that I bought. It's a $4,200 car. So it's like, well, how much do we switch to liability? So we're kind of weighing out how much risk do we want to take on versus how much do we want to let them carry? You know, maybe 12 months from now, we feel differently than we feel today. So, there's all those, the more you, like I said, the more you get into any aspect of the finances, the more you think, well, I could probably do a little bit more if I looked at this thing over here or I looked at that thing over there. And so you kind of start to, connect the dots and think, okay, well, if I saved a little bit on this and I made a little over here and I cut this thing out completely, you kind of start to do the math in your head or on paper and try and figure out how you can maximize it. And so it kind of snowballs on it. It's kind of like that with anything you do. The more intentional you get about something, the more you kind of focus on the details of it.
So we're changing. I mean, even though we use a broker for this one company, and we're going to another broker that uses that same company and see if there's some way he can even reduce or maybe that insurance agent is charging us a little bit more or whatever.
Uh-huh.
He's going to try to fine tune it and see if he can save us even more.
Yeah.
Because it's just going crazy.
Yep.
I mean.
But the nice thing about all that is it doesn't hurt you to shop it around. I mean, it's not like it's going to, it's not going to mess you up. It takes them a few minutes to do it. And it can be a little bit of a process when you switch from one to the other, but they do all the work and, they send you your new insurance cards or they tell you to download the new company's app. So you have it on your phone or whatever. So it's really not overly complicated, but sometimes we think, oh my gosh, it's going to be like so complicated to switch my insurance over. And it's like, these people do it 1,000 times a day, just call them up and have them shop it around for you and see what kind of deals you can get. So anybody else have anything else? Questions, comments, or concerns? Steve's trying to get Pat to ask a question. All right, well, I guess that's it for tonight. Let's pray and get out of here a couple minutes early. Yeah, Josie says, let's do it. Dear Lord God, thank you for this evening, God. Thank you for just another opportunity, God, to talk about finances. And God, just help us all to be good, wise stewards of the resources that you've given us. God, help us not to be just frivolous with our spending. God, help us to be intentional and to think about these things, and the ways that we're spending our money truly does reflect the things that are valuable and important to us. And God, I just pray that that this series can just be helpful and practical, and things that we can actually do and apply. And God, it's as good for me to teach it as it hopefully it is for everyone else to hear it. And so I just pray your blessing on our week going forward here, God, as we try to set aside time to meet with our spouse and just to talk about, God, what it is that you would have for us to do next as a couple and as a family. And God, just help us to be intentional. Help us to be thoughtful about the things we do. Help us not to compare ourselves against others, God. We know that can be really dangerous, but yet it's so easy to do, and it's just in our face all the time, God. So I pray that you would help us to keep ourselves protected from that. And God, just ask your blessing on the rest of our evening tonight. And I just want to lift up all the prayer requests that were mentioned this morning or this evening. And in Jesus' name I pray. Amen. I wanted me to remind most of you guys running.